And we're back with Uncomfortable Conversations on Blueprint Coaching. And this is part two of a two-part series with Victor Horcasitas. Welcome back, Victor.
Thank you again.
It's a pleasure, as always. In this holiday season, you know, it's great to see you so much.
And indeed, it's great to see you too. Did you have a nice Hanukkah?
I did have a nice
Kwanzaa.
Hanukkah. Thank you. No, Kwanzaa, no, but Hanukkah, yes.
Okay, do you celebrate Festivus?
I mean, I totally celebrate the Festivus. I love them. This is a festive time of year, and celebrating Christmas, and now I do celebrate it more.
Oh, but I meant Festivus. Are you familiar with Festivus?
Oh, no, I thought you said, and I'm not, I don't know Festivus.
Festivus,
no.
This is the time when the people who are neither Jewish nor Muslim nor Christian also want to celebrate, but they kind of feel left out. Because either they're, you know, they're atheists or they're another religion. So they say we celebrate Festivus for the rest of us. And we celebrate by bearing our grievances towards family members who have, you know, hurt us along the course of the past year, and with feats of strength.
Well, are you? Of course, there's like a little rhyme, Festivus for the rest of us. And there has to be something for people who don't celebrate. It's just, I love commercialism. Are you celebrating Festivus?
I celebrate Festivus all year round. Basically, I'm bitching about my family the entire year.
See, that's the attitude I like. Amazing. Well, yes, I'm celebrating Festivus and Hanukkah and all of the above during this festive time of year. And today we are celebrating, well, we're not celebrating, but we're celebrating an uncomfortable conversation that you want to have.
And indeed, yes.
This is the first time on our show that we're going to actually coach you through having one rather than talking about one that has been had. And so we're going to get to that in a second. But as always, wanted to share this thought with our listeners and with you and see what you think. This says, whatever you do in life, surround yourself with smart people who will argue with you. And that's said by John Wooden. I don't know who that is. But whoever John Wooden is, I really like that quote.
And very applicable to the conversation of today.
It is, actually, and we're going to get to that today because we're going to be talking about how to talk to your board about how to perhaps fire someone from a company. But do you think that, you know, some people say, well, I don't want to surround myself with people in life who I'm going to argue with. You know, that's just a stress that I don't need. What do you think about?
Oh, I completely disagree. I love that stress. No, what you want to do is surround yourself with people who are intelligent, who can argue with you. Because if they argue with you and they're not smart, then there's that idiom or that phrase as well. Never argue with a fool, because other people won't know who's who. And if you're arguing with somebody who is more intelligent than you, then it kind of has to, you have to up your game to their level. And if you're smart and you know your stuff, you don't have to be aggressive about it. If you have a logical flow, then you are able to articulate a well thought out and compelling position. And as long as you're battling, you know, intellectually with people in this manner, it makes you sharper. It makes you more prepared for the conversations, the uncomfortable conversations that are required in order to advance.
No, and I love that the spin, you know, the twist you put on that, because yeah, some people think of arguing and they just think of and having bad arguments, but you surround yourself with people who are smart. They're challenging you to, like you said, up your game and to probably look at things in a different way. And I love it. I always used to say, in terms of friendships, you know, a friend isn't real unless you can argue with them. Because some people say, oh, we've been friends for years, we've never had an argument. And to me, there's a part of that that just, your friendships, if you don't feel comfortable enough arguing with a friend, then there's a part of that friendship that I don't think is super real. Yes. So good. Glad we're on the same page with that quote, which leads us into, let's talk about your conversation that you want to have with your board about this particular person who you want to fire.
Okay. Yes. Well, that's a very succinct way of putting it. There's a like person in my organization who is caustic to the rest of the organization. And the challenge that we face is that she is being advised by her husband, who is extremely well versed in labor law. He's a labor lawyer for a professional. And what we need to do is figure out what is the best way to resolve the situation. After having had the opportunity to discuss with different management as well as the board, we have very different takes on how to deal with it. So I guess the conversation today is to surround myself with people, have intelligent arguments as to what is the best way to move forward, whether it was keeping her or firing her altogether, or finding a peaceful solution to coexist with a person who we all know is actually, one thing that we all on common ground, everyone thinks this person should no longer continue at the organization.
So then I guess what is the dilemma with regards to the talk you want to have with the board?
Quite frankly, it comes down to money, as it always tends to be. The organization that I'm going to try to keep that one confidential. I hope it doesn't slip out in the our conversation today. We have limited funds. And the person who is, being difficult with us, I've been with the organization for 5 years. I've only met her once. And it's because she told me that she was actually with the organization. And I kind of jokingly said, no, you're not. I know everybody in this organization. Who are you? I thought she was laughing or, kind of kidding around. And
she must have felt really special.
Well, she came in and, she hadn't been there in 5 years, but what she was trying to do is to demonstrate legally that she was somehow maintaining a relationship with the organization. So she comes in unexpectedly, walks onto the premises, and does things that actually she's not allowed to be doing. But from a legal standpoint, I understand the jurisprudence in Spain is nowhere near what it is in the United States. They're much more generous here. And what we do want to make sure that our goals are always in line with is what is best for the organization.
So then what is your, you're walking into this board meeting, you want to have this talk with them. What is your ideal outcome?
My ideal outcome is for this person to leave the organization with two concomitant goals. One is for the least amount of money as possible that we have to shell out to get her to go, and to get her to go quietly without a huge pain, because it's a small organization, very few employees, but with lots of volunteers. And when you have something is bad in the environment, it really does contaminate the environment, both for the workers as well as for the volunteers. And when you have people who are volunteering their time, the last thing they want to do is to walk into an area that's very tense emotionally.
And so I guess when talking to the board, what are you most apprehensive about in terms of, conveying what your objectives are and to getting them through?
Well, this is where it gets to be a little bit complicated. One thing I failed to mention, and what I would like to see happen, is that the person who hasn't been working with us, she took a leave of absence. In that leave of absence, there's a Spanish contract that you can use, which is, it comes quickly and is very tax efficient, I believe. And basically, contract of substitution. So whenever this person's out, or whenever this person chooses to come back, the person you hired in her absence has to go. So and that contract can last as long as it needs to be. As long as that person's gone, the person you hired can be there indefinitely. Problem is, when the person that was on the leave house comes back, what do you do with this other person if that other person actually is much better at her job than the one who left? And this is a situation, it's night and day. The person who was hired to substitute is far and away a much superior employee in terms of empathy, in terms of productivity, in terms of goals oriented, in terms of generating funds.
So you want this person to
absolutely
pretty much be in that role.
We've actually, the board has come together and we selected this as the person not only to fill this role, but we want her to move 3 or 4 levels above where she is now and to lead the organization, be the manager moving forward. And this is where we have a little bit of a problem, because in order to, we get into issues as to how to get rid of the one that we currently have the most economically feasible way.
Well, so I guess, with regards to, with having that in mind, what do you think are some options? What are what do you think some things that you can do?
Well, one of the things that we can do is we can go steady state. There is a limit to how long a person can be on a leave of absence, and that limit right now, I understand, is 3 years, unless she goes into maternity leave, then it all recycles. So, if this person doesn't ask for her job back after 3 years, then she can automatically be let go and there's no consequences. She doesn't have to be indemnified. Basically, she hasn't been there in 5, so it's almost as if she hasn't done anything with us for 5 years. What I would like for my board to properly appreciate is something that isn't so obvious, and that is the person who we hired to substitute her is extremely capable, has other offers to work in other places, and is in a position that she's smart enough to know that if all we do is wait to hear whether or not the person who's gone wants to come back, if she decides to take her position, she's going to be left without, without a job. And we risk losing this very valuable person because we were not proactive in trying to make sure that we had a home for her.
Well, and so you say you want your board to properly appreciate, and you know, we start off this conversation by saying you want to have this conversation with the board. Is that what you want them to, like, is that what you want to convey to them? Are they not currently on board with appreciating that?
They are on board now. Now is basically coming down to tactics. What is the, normally I would say, or we're debating, for example, this is why I find my board to be extremely intelligent. They're very savvy men and women who in the business world are used to dealing with hiring and firing employees, and they do that a lot more often than I do. However, they're not as in touch with the current operations of this organization as I am. And when we start talking about whether we should just wait to see how she reacts, because then it might be a smooth transition, we're making a big to-do about nothing. I said, well, I don't like the idea of not taking the bull by the horns and being proactive. However, when we talk to lawyers, basically they've told us she's, as an example, she's entitled to 30,000 euros. Indemnification, if we were to fire her, she's entitled at least to 30,000. Do we offer her 30,000 to kind of get out of our hair so we don't have to worry about this any longer? We don't threaten the employee who has substituted her as if, you know, we're not properly appreciating her? Or do we ask for a little bit more money for wiggle room? I've opted for 50,000. And some members of my board are thinking, well, this is crazy. If the lawyers are telling us that we can owe only 30, why am I asking 50,000 in terms of budget so that we can negotiate? And this is where we start to get into, you know, difficult.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, when it comes to conversations like this and sort of tactics like this, there's a lot of ways you can go. I think, you know, you're talking about kind of being in synergy or sort of being on the same page as the rest of the board and getting everyone to sort of come to one conclusion and then implement that. I mean, what do you think is the hardest part or going to be the hardest part when you guys really sit down to talk about this that you're worried about?
The hardest part is that even though we have our own board, and I think we have coalesced around the fact that we do want to make sure that the person who has substituted is going to stay with us, we actually report to a higher authority in terms of, you know, a global organization that really only looks at numbers. And so when they ask our lawyers, who are the experts in labor law, you should only have to pay 30,000. Why are we paying? Why are we willing to go to 50? And black and white, it seems like a very easy decision for them not to fight to make sure that we have somebody who's going to be a transition. I like to argue it'll cost us a heck of a lot more if we have to find somebody else to retrain them, because we're very clear that we don't want the person to come back. So we're going to have to let her go at some point. Do we let her go now or do we let her go in the future? And I'd rather just, you know, like a Band-Aid, rip it off and move on, because bad apples will sour the entire, you know, bucket.
Well, currently, how many people on your board are on the same page as you?
3 out of 5.
And so is the goal, is the objective to get the remaining two on the same page?
It is. And I think that they are coming around, because, again, we started talking about in the past, there's an element of trust, because they don't necessarily agree, but they also understand that they're not as in touch with the day-to-day operations as we are. Do we want to have the same, do we envision the same outcome, basically, of having this lady who's a substitute take over and run this organization, and 4, 5, 10 years down the line, they finally do? Where we're having a little bit of trouble is the money issue. And right there, it becomes more of an exercise on worst case scenarios or scenarios based on, you know, a different set of possible outcomes that we will take in negotiating these tactics. I don't know if I've answered your question, Sam.
No, you definitely haven't. So I guess because we're working, you know, coaching is, you know, we're trying to work through this. This is a dilemma of yours. It's something that's just come up. And I know you said, yeah, let's take on this challenge, you know, try and talk about how do we talk to the board right now about this, because it's a big topic.
Oh, for example, what I would like to do is approach her and say, okay, what do you want? I'm much more upfront with this lady. That's my approach. I say, what is it that you're trying to come back? Because she knows that we don't want her back. So there's a silly game going on. How much does she really want to come back to an organization that she knows does not want her?
Well, then what is standing in your way, I guess, of just approaching her?
I think a respect for the rest of the board of how to handle it. So we want to make sure that we have unified front in when we, in how we approach her, so that everybody feels that even the we're very democratic, very American in this type of we can have dissenters, but the majority rules. And you know, I've been against certain things that we've done, but I've been the minority view. We move forward. We don't look back and hold grudges. But to the extent that we can have a, you know, people, everybody on board, it just makes us feel a lot stronger. And it makes us, the lady who we would like to hire can see that we're all fully behind her, because this is actually quite important to us, because we know that she could make a lot more money if she were to go somewhere else.
So it's presenting this unified front, which it sounds like you are on the track to going to get. Like you're on the mission of trying to get everyone on board to sort of
see
where you're coming from.
I think so. The challenge is, you know, we can, in the abstract form, if we only had if 30,000 was not an issue, everybody would be on board. But what if it comes to be a lot more than 30,000? How much can we offer this lady to kind of go away quietly? 50, 60, 70? This is where we start to differ.
Well, and I think that's a good point, because a lot of times when you're trying to get people to, I don't know, be on your same page or see where you're coming from or sign up to what you want, it's very hard. So what tactics do you use, or have you used in the past, to get people on your page?
This sounds pretty cold.
Cold is great.
This sounds pretty cold, but you basically you find out how to push people's buttons. For example, this lady, we know that she has certain priorities in her life, and those priorities right now are being with her children. Now, she's hiding behind the law in order to, the longer she stays, this is how screwed things up. As long as, even though she hasn't been with us for 5 years, all the benefits and taxes that we're paying, they go to basically seniority for her. So even if she hasn't worked a day with us in 5 years, it's all the seniority and benefits of 5 years are accumulating for her. And what she's looking to do is maximize what she can get out of us. It's been very clear. And what we'd like to do is find a solution that allows her to feel that she's won, that we all win. Except that sounds really easy to do when you talk about having a win-win strategy and everybody has good faith, but we're operating with a lady who is not coming into us with good faith. So the worst thing that we can do is not be unified in our front. That's my belief.
Well, and so I guess that's what I'm wondering, you know, is how do you get the rest of the board unified? Like, how do you get them on? How do you get people on board with your vision?
What I suggested is the two people who are not totally on board with us, or you know, they have very strong reservations, is they sit with us and they meet her. And then they will understand that this person is really only out to maximize whatever she can get out of us. And then it becomes more of a mechanical situation, and we perhaps have to we're not obviously going to offer leave money on the table if we don't have to, but let's go ahead and find out what is important to her and start playing with that, because I'd rather her accept more some money and then walk away happy than create bad blood between everybody.
Well, it sounds like by exposing these other two board members to her, you're giving them more visibility into the situation and more awareness. Like the more clarity everyone has surrounding exactly what's going on, then the better decisions can be made.
Yes, because these two board members they're very sharp, but they don't have the feel. I mean, if they were dealing with this person on a day-to-day basis, I'm very certain they would take the same approach. Okay, we're all business owners. We know that this is painful. It infuriates us to have to compensate 30,000 or 40,000 euros to a person who has acted in bad faith for 5 years, except that 30,000 or 40,000 better is still better than 70,000 or 80,000. And it's when they start to realize that the number that we are tossing around is actually a conservative one, that's what we need them to come around and agree with.
Well, it's people coming around on their own. And so we only have a minute or two left of this. And,
you
know, with coaching, I know we could go on and on with this. And I know that we haven't reached a final conclusion result, but what, I guess, in two words, you know, what would be your takeaway from this conversation?
It has helped clarify that the two people who we need, who are not on board, really need to have direct time with this person so they can fully appreciate how dangerous she can be to the long-term goals of our organization.
Succinctly said, Victor. Love it. Well, thank you very much. And thanks for letting me talk this out with you. This was enlightening, and hopefully anyone listening who, you know, have a similar situation might have been working through something in their own head.
Thank you. I wasn't quite sure how to approach this, but working with you is always fantastic.
Well, so glad to help. And something I'm going to leave you with and everyone else with, and this is something I like to give some clients, just a little, it's a fun exercise in terms of how you kind of want to be seen. Write down what you want to write on your epitaph. Epitaph is your tombstone. So, you know, if you have, when you die, you know, what do you want to be written on your tombstone? This is your challenge for the weekend. Have fun with it. Grab a glass of wine. Don't overthink it, and just, you know, see what comes to mind. And you've been listening to Blueprint Coaching. You can go to blueprintcoaching.ca for any more information. And thank you to our executive producer, Catherine Gostoy. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.